Welcome to PCMC. If you're new to the show, PCMC means Pop Culture Man Children. And this is a podcast where we talk about all of media culture, movies, TV shows, video games, streaming, you know, toys, everything, comic books, a lot of nerd ephemera, a lot of geek culture, if you will, a lot of what the buzz is in the world of entertainment. If you're new to the show, welcome. We come out every single Wednesday and we're available anywhere podcasts are found. So wherever you get your podcast, you can find us there. We do different kinds of episodes. Today's episode is what we call a full episode because it has three segments. We're going to talk about the news, what's going on, not in the real world, but in the world of media culture. We're going to have a chill sesh where we just talk about, you know, anything, what we're watching, what we're doing now. And then we're going to talk about our current obsessions. And then the other kind of episode are special episodes, episodes with special topics. And more lately, we're doing those kind of episodes because that's just where we are right now. That's just, you know, what's happening. I think full episodes don't have a great, I don't know. I don't think they have a great shelf life, right?
They're not evergreen, no.
No, I mean, because we're going to talk about things that are happening and you know, old news. Sometimes I go and listen to old episodes and it's like, hey, you guys hear they're making some new Star Wars movies. No, actually, we didn't go back that far. We're only about 3 years old. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
How are you today, Anthony?
I'm okay. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing rather well.
Good.
Fantastic. So you want to do some news?
Sure, let's head over to the news desk.
All right, here we go.
We're riding horses over there.
Taking my steed. Dustin Diamond. Yeesh.
Rest in peace.
He played Screech on Saved by the Bell, and he died at the age of 44 just recently.
Sorry, it's tragic.
It's, he was not, he had a rough life, man.
He did. Although his castmates don't sign on to that. They say that he fabricated all that stuff about the hard time he had on the show.
Yes, he wrote a tell-all book about Saved by the Bell where he kind of says that everyone treated him like shit because he was so much younger. And the rest of the cast denied it. But then when he died recently, a lot of the cast was like, oh, yeah, and had nice things to say about him, even though he was not part of this reboot.
He's a tragic figure because I feel like he spent the last 20 plus years of his life just chasing a check.
Yeah, he did a porn video, but it was like mostly like jokey and parodic, which was just somehow more sad than for an actual porn video.
Yeah, and then that tell-all book. Yeah,
he was on Celebrity Fit Club.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
That was a VH1 classic back when VH1 was the fucking king of really cheesy fucking reality shows, and he went on and wasn't that overweight. So he kind of was a dick to everybody else. And, but you know, he was a child star. And, I think we know by now that that's bad for you. You know, you want to not do that.
I was just going to say, I feel like we're at the point now where we're realizing that being a child star is just, you know, coping with childhood trauma for the rest of your life. I mean, it really breaks people.
Because even if you say like, okay, I want to go, you know what? I'm done. I want to have a normal life. If you're recognizable, that becomes hard because what if you decide, okay, I'm going to go and just get a job, you know, in an office. People would be like, oh, you know, Screech works in this office.
Yeah. And then it would be like, oh, he can't get work. So he's got to work in this office, even if that's what he wants to do.
Right. Exactly. Like I remember it was a story a couple years ago. One of the cast members of the Cosby Show, I forget the actor's name, but he played the husband of one of the older daughters. He was working at a Trader Joe's, and like it was all over, like, oh, what a sad thing. And he just seemed like a normal guy living a normal life.
Yeah, I remember back in the 90s or early 2000s. The son from Who's the Boss was working at a Gap.
Yeah,
he was on one of those like Where Are They Now shows. And he was like, oh, you know, I've just always wanted to work in retail, you know, and I'm feeling great. And just, I feel like everybody was like, no, that's a lie. You want to be on TV.
Maybe it speaks to a lot of people have the desire to be famous.
Yeah, well, everybody thinks that being famous is the best thing you can be. So to lose it is the greatest tragedy in the world.
Right. When it's probably awful.
Oh, yeah. I think it's probably horrible.
I remember Dustin Diamond was on Howard Stern like 10 years ago or maybe even longer. And he was so desperate for money. He was selling T-shirts, but he spelled Screech with like three E's. And he was like, yeah, I can't spell it the right way because NBC will sue me.
Oof, that is dark.
It was upsetting. And then recently he had a stabbing. He stabbed somebody.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And, but you know, he died of cancer.
What kind of cancer was it?
I'm trying to find it now. It's the kind that like doesn't fucking take its time with you.
Like a really quick one.
Yeah, like they said he didn't suffer. Saved by the Bell. This is from CBS News. Saved by the Bell star Dustin Diamond died Monday after a 3-week fight with carcinoma. 3 weeks.
Yikes.
So that's rough. So, you know, I figure that we should start the show on that kind of note.
Yeah. Well, and then there's Rush Limbaugh.
There is Rush Limbaugh. I wasn't going to bring him up. I'm happy he's dead. How about that? Why? I see all these articles like, look, we should never talk terrible about somebody who died. They've got a family. But here's the list of all the horrible, racist, sexist, misogynist, conspiracy theorist, fucking homophobic bullshit he said. And it's like, you know what? We're better without someone like that.
You know what? That's bold, but I'll allow it.
Hot take. He was a bad person, and now we've got one less bad person walking around.
All of other people on the internet are having that hot take, and then there's a lot of conservatives that are like fake horrified by it.
Yeah.
They're like, the left.
The left. The intolerant left. Just because a guy calls a young girl a slut because she wants her medical coverage to cover her fucking birth control doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Just because he fucking said abortion should be done with guns, insinuating that you should kill mothers who want abortions.
Apparently he also, I just found this out from Twitter. He did a thing during the 80s where he would like make a mockery of gay men who had died of AIDS.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was like a regular segment on his show. So that's just about as low as you can get.
Yeah, I'm glad he's dead. All right, so moving on.
Yeah, yeah. But not Dustin Diamond, the incomparable Dustin Diamond.
No, he was a real person. I think that's what's interesting to me. I mean, interesting is maybe not the right word. That's what's notable is that, you know, like people gush over celebrity deaths. But he was like he died a normal person.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds you that they're normal people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. What else is in the news? Sex and the City is coming back. It's a limited series.
It sure is.
Anthony, you love Sex and the City. What do you feel about this reboot?
I'll be honest with you. I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited. I have my concerns, but I'm excited.
Please air some of those concerns.
Well, first of all, there's no Samantha.
The funny one.
Well, yes. I mean, Samantha's arguably the best character, but she's not there. So that's one thing. But then it was just revealed yesterday or today that Big is not coming back and Steve is not coming back either.
Huh.
So I'm wondering if... I know that in the screenplay for that awful third movie that never got made, Big was supposed to die.
Wow. So
if this is just going to start with Big having already died. And I don't know about Steve. I guess maybe he and Miranda get divorced. I don't know.
That would feel like a real shitty fucking reboot.
Yeah, it started. I feel like when I first saw that teaser, I was like, oh my God, this. Well, I was very excited because what's her name? Samantha Irby is writing on it.
This is something that I find really interesting.
Yeah, so Samantha Irby, who's really, really funny, who's really cool, And, you know, it's just like a great writer and a new voice in the room for Sex and the City. She's never worked on Sex and the City before. She's joining the writing team. And apparently the team is made up of her, a couple of other new people, and a lot of the original women who were on the writing team for the show, which was good news to hear, because part of the reason why the movies are so bad is because they became projects just for Michael Patrick King, and he took over and took full creative control.
Yeah.
And that's why the writing of the movies is just so, it just pales in comparison to the TV show. So when I heard that, and then I heard Samantha Irby, I was like, oh, this might be really good. But now I'm worried.
Well, here's what it is. You've got Samantha Irby. You've got Rachna Frubaum from Fresh Off the Boat. She's a writer of that show.
Yeah.
Kelly Goff. And then there were some veteran writers from Sex and the City, Julie Rosenberg and Eliza Zertzky.
Yeah.
I was kind of taken up. I feel like it's a good fit, but when I heard Samantha Irby was writing, it kind of took me back, because her writing is so raw and so about, she talks about her own body and body image. I feel like I would be easily, I could easily see her writing an essay about how Sex and the City is about shitty, skinny white women. And to see her writing on the show just kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, but at the same time, I know she's a great lover of pop culture, so I feel like she also probably loves Sex and the City, even if she is critical of it. You know, like, yeah. Roxanne Gay is like a similar voice, and Samantha Irby always says people always think she's Roxanne Gay.
Right.
I just pretend that I am. So that's why I was excited, because I was like, okay, now you're bringing in somebody who's young and funny and cool and very current, and who probably has nostalgia for the original show, but is going to come in with some criticism of the way that it used to be.
So right. Maybe
that'll be like the change that it needs breathed into it. And also, not for nothing, a lot of the early days of Sex and the City were raw and like a lot cooler than it ended up becoming.
Right.
But hopefully it's like, I'd like to see it. I want to see much less emphasis on the fashion, and I want to see emphasis on the story and the writing and the characters again.
Well, it would be a real return to form, because the movies really took it off in a... I mean, the first movie is barely a movie. It's just like a... It's like taking a victory lap. And yeah. Then the second movie, which I have to admit, I have not seen all of. I've only seen bits of it. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I was like, yeah. Is this a Bob Hope road comedy? Like what? I'm baffled at whatever the turn of events were that led to Sex and the City 2.
And it is so tone deaf. And, you know, it's like, it's good that it came out when it did, because if it were released now, it would be like destroyed way worse than it was back then.
Are you saying that all gay people don't have Liza Minnelli at their weddings?
Well, that's the thing, is like with Michael Patrick King taking over, you know, like, Sex and the City was, the writers were all women. It was women's stories. And then Michael Patrick King came in, and it's almost like it just became all camp. I read a review of it when it first came out saying that, like, these characters have become essentially women as drag queens, because they are always, no matter what the scene or situation is, they're always dressed in extremely campy, outlandish, expensive fashions. And it was basically this whole essay that I read, and this was like 10 years ago when it first came out, was basically saying like Michael Patrick King has made Sex and the City like the fantasy through the eyes of a gay man, and he's taken it away from women. That's why I was happy to hear that this reboot, it seems like we're back to an all-women writer room.
Yeah, I of course will watch it. Do you think that they'll keep it with just the three main women, or they'll find a new fourth? Kind of like the way they brought in another old guy in Community to take Chevy Chase's place.
I don't know. I feel like it's like they're getting taken out at the knees before they even start the race, because right from the pilot now, or the first episode, they're going to have to be like, oh, well, Big's dead and Samantha's dead, and, you know, Miranda and Steve got divorced, and, you know, like,
no. I'll make a wager right now, which I might lose, but if I had to make a wager now, I'd say that they're going to craft stories about the women that just don't need to show the men. I don't think they're going to kill Big. I think Big is her husband, but he's just not going to be seen.
Well, here's my other theory.
I think they'll kill Samantha for sure.
Yeah. Here's my other theory. And I bet you they haven't even worked this all out yet because this is still like in the early stages.
I wonder if they're going to do the full reboot thing and just ignore the movies. Because if they do that, then they could just ignore the marriage of Carrie and Big and all of that stuff.
They're just single women living in the city, just from get-go.
Where the show left off 20 years later. That might be the smartest way to do it.
Okay.
I don't know if they will, but it wouldn't be unheard of.
No, I mean, we've talked before on PCMC about the weird things that happen nowadays with continuity and canon.
Well, yeah, even look at Roseanne when it came back. They got rid of all Jackie's kids. And
right, they got rid of Roseanne's fourth kid.
Yeah.
They just like, they kind of picked and choose what they wanted to keep as canon.
Yeah. They just pick up from the essence of the old show, not the actual continuity.
But what if they had a new fourth lady that was a person of color?
Well, I feel like that's everybody's suggestion. I feel like I've read that from a million people, and I think it's a good suggestion. But I don't know how it would be like. Some people have suggested that Jennifer Hudson come back because she was in the movie, and she'd be like the fourth person.
Right, and they barely used her.
Right. But then would it be like, oh, this is our fourth friend who you never met before? Or would it be like the series would be about them making a fourth friend? I don't know. It's hard. I definitely feel like, especially with Samantha Irby there, they're going to address the race stuff.
They have to.
The fact that the old series is just almost exclusively white characters in New York City.
All right. I've got a fucking mind-blowing idea.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They have a new fourth member. She's younger than the rest of them. It's Lena Dunham.
Oh my God. Talk about cancel culture. It'd be Lena Dunham who was eviscerated for having four white leads on her show.
Well, everyone, when that show came out, when Girls came out, everyone compared it to Sex and the City.
Yeah. I mean, like you could see the comparison. It was kind of like the millennial Sex and the City.
It could be like a white privilege super band.
Well, I'm excited to see it. I have hope that it'll be good. I was going to say, HBO Max is definitely excited for it because they rushed out a teaser right away.
And I'm glad that we're living in the age of streaming premium content, because part of the reason the movies don't work, besides the shitty writing, is that these aren't movie narratives. These are episodic narratives. So I'm glad that it's a limited series, not another movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think making a Sex and the City 3 would have been a bad idea no matter what.
All right, our next news story is about a woman of color that I think is very funny and would be good on Sex and the City. Mindy Kaling. Mindy yes. Kaling is going to be voicing Velma in a new animated HBO Max series about Velma from Scooby-Doo.
I'm so excited for this.
First of all, even besides Mindy Kaling, who I think is brilliant casting, just the idea of a show all about Velma is such a good idea. Because it's like Daria.
I was just going to say it's like Daria. It's like the Daria of the Scooby-Doo world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wonder if the other characters are going to be in it. Do we know that?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that. Well, will it be a prequel or a sequel? It would be funny if it were a sequel and it was like after everything and she's just trying to live her life, but like Shaggy calls her.
Also, what's the tone? Is it going to be for children or...
They keep using the term adult animation.
Oh, that's great. Oh my God. This could be amazing.
I think it really could be. I'm very excited. I'm very excited for it. Did you see how she eviscerated from some fucking troll on Twitter?
No.
Some piece of shit troll. You know the episode of The Office where Michael Scott is like, no, no, no. And it's like a meme.
Yes.
On her Twitter, where she announced that, he posted the gif of that.
And was she like, I wrote that?
Yes, that's exactly her response. I wrote that episode.
Which is a great response.
Fucking perfect response, idiot. I don't know why people, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like some people have it out for her. And I don't know if it's because she is a woman that is not conventionally attractive, if she's a woman of color. if she is a woman who's funny and people tend to hate women who think they're funny.
I think it's just she's a woman, period. And everything else, you know, has its place too. But I just feel like people have a problem with women. Men just have a problem with women.
Sometimes I think people think she is her character from The Office.
Yeah, but if you've seen any of the other million things she's done since then, she's not.
All right, so I got some more bad news.
Oh, God.
Actually, this is a case of I was excited when I heard the beginning of the sentence. And then we got to the end of the sentence and I was bummed out. Netflix is making a limited series called Wednesday about Wednesday Addams. But...
directed by Tim Burton.
Yup. And because of that, I'm out.
Well, but okay. Did he have anything to do with the Addams Family movies?
No, not at all.
For some reason, I thought he did. Oh, so then I'm out too.
No, they were directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. He had nothing to do with those movies.
I don't know why I thought he did.
Because it's his fucking brand.
The aesthetic.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's sort of weird because it's like just like Velma, it's like removing one, divorcing one character from the rest of the characters that she's known to be with.
Right. So the whoever runs the fucking Instagram for Netflix, they said the most Gen Z thing. It was a show where the main character is the main character.
Ugh, pandering.
Because if you don't know people, these Gen Zers, that's something they say. They say, like, I'm the main character. Thing they say.
Maybe it'll be good. Probably not. Most likely not.
I mean, the big next thing would be who is cast. Because if it's inspired casting...
Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, you know, I think I'm through with her
forever.
I like her. I don't know. She seems rude in interviews.
She has no manners. I can't say I've ever seen her in any interviews, to be honest.
No, I don't know who would play Wednesday.
I don't know any young people.
There you go. Well, I don't know if the character's like a kid or like a older Wednesday. It's got to be older, right? Because if it were a little kid.
I don't know. I'm already bored talking about it, so I doubt I'm going to watch it.
Fair enough.
It's animated?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I was thinking it was animated just based on what I saw.
No, I don't think so.
You know, did you ever see the Addams Family musical on Broadway?
No, I didn't.
The biggest sin that musical committed was it made Wednesday like a normal girl who wanted to have a normal life. And it was kind of like the whole thing was kind of like a take on The Birdcage, where she had like a fiance and his conservative family come over.
That's a real sin because her character's most interesting kid.
I know. It's not a great musical for many reasons, but that's one of the worst things that it did was age up her character and change her totally.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, she's like an older teenager, and then like Pugsley's like a little brother.
No.
I feel like there have been more things with the Addams Family that have been bad than have been good.
That might be true.
That was bad, and those TV movies were bad, and I don't know. You said it was good, but I heard that CGI movie was bad.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I ended up liking that. That was good. I think they're making another one of those. Yeah. It's a thing that's easy to get bad, to do wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So this isn't really news, but it's something that I loved, which was the Mountain Dew Zero Sugar commercial with Gizmo.
Yes. Is it part of a series? Is it going to be a series?
I don't know. I hope so.
I think so, because it looks like it's setting up for the next commercial at the end.
Yeah.
Tell the people what happens in it.
Well, you've got, what's his real name? Zach Galligan, who plays Billy in the Gremlins films.
And nothing else.
Yeah. Sitting on a couch, drinking a Mountain Dew Zero Sugar. And with him on the couch is Gizmo, who's a puppet, which is great.
Yes. Love the practical effects.
And Gizmo's like, can I try it? And Billy, who really should know better at this point, is like, okay, but be careful. And then Gizmo's like, Gizmo, careful. And then Gizmo drinks it and gets it all over himself, and then he's wet now, so fucking gremlins or like little furry mogwai start coming out of his back.
But then at the end of the commercial, they've continued the narrative because he has a teenage daughter, from dad, and she's got Spike on her shoulder.
That's the best part of the commercial, which is his daughter comes in and she's all kind of like goth dressed, and on her shoulder is
right.
a fucking mohawked fucking Mogwai.
I see potential for a Netflix series there.
I love it. And then her and her Mogwai both roll their eyes at the same time.
It's adorable.
That also tells me Phoebe Kate said no.
I think she retired from acting.
She did. She did. She hasn't acted in like 20 years or something.
You know who else did? Cameron Diaz. I was just reading about it today.
Did she?
She hasn't made a movie since 2014.
So her as Miss Hannigan in Annie was her last role?
Yes. She retired from acting after that.
I mean, all right. I respect it.
Yeah, I mean, she did it for about 20 years, but I don't know. I just saw it popped up today on CNN. She was being interviewed for something else she's doing now, and they asked her about acting, and she said she doesn't think she'll ever go back.
Wow. Okay.
That Gremlins commercial was fun.
Yeah, I they kind of have fake music in it that sounds like the Gremlins theme.
Will there ever be a Gremlins 3?
There has been a Gremlins 3 in production on IMDb for 1 million years.
Like one of those sequels that's never going to really happen.
But there is an animated show coming out that is happening for real. So maybe if that's successful, I think we're at the point now where it would be a reboot, not a sequel.
Well, you get nowadays, I feel like there's everything has that expiration date where if you wait too long, it has to be a reboot instead of a direct
sequel. Right. But with a reboot, you have a greater chance of it being not puppets. And I'm out if it's not puppets.
Yeah, I feel like we've learned from the Star Wars prequels that we need to do puppets for stuff like that.
I mean, that's the charm of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll argue that's why Baby Yoda works so well. He's a puppet.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in shots where it's CGI, fans pick it apart and be like, look at this shot where he's not a puppet.
Because they haven't yet managed. I mean, maybe they're getting closer, but to me, CGI just always looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Even like when does that shitty thing now where they bring back old characters.
Yeah.
CGI faces. It's just, it's so uncanny.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems that can come from CGI. I mean, having a puppet is having something physically there.
Right. It also improves the actors' performances that are acting alongside those characters.
Right.
The CGI, it's like you go back and you watch those Star Wars prequels, where they're basically just like walking around in green screen constantly. Like you could tell their performances are so stiff and stilted because they're like not reacting to anything.
Yeah. So I wanted to, there's a couple trailers I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
The first one I wanted to talk about was Cruella, the Disney film with Emma Stone as Cruella de Vil. What do you think?
The audience can't see, but I just did an exaggerated thumbs down.
Why do you say that?
It's so exhausting. Like, I knew exactly what it was going to be before I watched it. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it's just like, hey, it's Harley Quinn, but it's Cruella de Vil.
Right.
Dialogue is horrible. I think Emma Stone's accent is horrible. I think it looks just lame.
I wasn't at all excited about it.
I'm going to disagree with you wholeheartedly.
Go ahead.
I think you're right. I do think that it is like Harley Quinn. And certainly they're selling it like Harley Quinn and like the Joker. The trailer is very similar to the Joker trailer, but it's what I've been asking for. I've been saying for years now that Maleficent was the only good live action remake, and all these other live action Disney remakes have been pointless. So to center it on the villain instead of not the villain, I think that's a good idea. And I think it's visually very stunning. You know, I think twice in the trailer you see Dalmatians, and both times they're growling and looking mean and angry. And I think that says a lot for what this movie's going to be.
Well, it looks cool. I mean, it looks visually good. I mean, I won't knock it for that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too pessimistic. Maybe it'll be fun. And, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong. But I just felt like it was so beat for beat everything I expected it to be. It doesn't feel fresh at all. There were a lot of hot takes on Twitter, which then made its way to BuzzFeed, of people being like, oh, you know, like her only attribute from the original movie is that she wants to murder puppies, and this is who we choose to build the feature film around. And I'm not 100% on board with that.
No, I don't want to cancel Cruella de Vil.
Well, she will be canceled. At the same time, like, I guess it's interesting to make her kind of like a punky figure, but it doesn't totally fit either.
Well, that's where I'm interested in what they're going to do, because I don't think you can just turn it around. I think you'd have to do, like, remember with Maleficent, they kind of made it that the story you thought you knew was wrong. I think like it's got to be something like that, because it looks like the owner of the Dalmatian is the villain.
Right. But the thing is, it's hard to do that with 101 Dalmatians, because it's going to be like, how could she... Janine, we're going to have Janine on the next episode, but Janine, when we were talking about it, she said, like, maybe she ends up being a PETA activist and it was all just a stunt.
Or maybe she wants to save the Dalmatians and fucking the woman just frames her.
That woman is not in 101 Dalmatians, though, unless this movie pushes, like, posits her into that story.
Well, isn't there a... I haven't seen the original since I was a little kid, and I don't even know if I saw the whole thing. Don't they have a mother and father, or like a man and woman owner?
Yeah, so the original... First of all, you should rewatch the original, because it's one of the most charming Disney movies that isn't a musical. You'd love it. It's the Pongo and Purdy are the mother and father dog, and they get together because their owners get together. And the owner, the woman, Anita... Cruella was her college roommate who comes to visit her and then sees all the puppies and like wants to kill them to make the coat.
Okay.
So Anita has to be in there somewhere too, I would assume.
It looks like Emma Thompson is the... Oh, she's credited as the Baroness.
Yeah, that's not Anita.
But I think that's that role, because she's the... It's her house where you see the Dalmatians.
See, but I don't know if I got the feeling that this all, like, this movie all takes place before 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, I see.
Like, I don't think those are the same Dalmatians.
Interesting. Okay.
Like a young Cruella de Vil.
Okay. Okay.
She's supposed to be like an older woman in 101 Dalmatians.
As for her accent, it doesn't ring to me as genuine, but it rings to me as great.
The laugh is good.
She's having a ball.
Emma Stone deserves it.
I think Emma Stone is great.
I like her.
I think Emma Stone is great. I think she's gonna do a great job.
I don't think she's great. I do like her though.
How do you feel about Glenn Close as Cruella in that live action remake from the 90s?
I did not like those movies. They were super boring because the dogs didn't talk in them.
Oh, then what's the point?
I know. The cutest part is the dogs talking, especially the little fat puppy who always wants to eat.
So the second trailer is Kevin Can Fuck Himself. But it's spelled Kevin Can F asterisk asterisk K himself.
Yeah. So this one has been in the works for a while.
I believe this is a series.
It's a series, yeah. But I read about it like years ago. It's been in development for a long time. Originally, like, Rashida Jones was attached to it. But basically, it's an interesting genre. I read something today that said that it's, like, in the post-WandaVision, it's, like, we're going to see a lot of these, like, genre-bending TV shows. And this is because it's, like, she's got two lives. She has, like, her inner life, which is very serious and single camera. And then she has the life that she shares with her husband, which is like filmed like a three camera sitcom with a laugh track. And
right. It's
clearly supposed to be like a Kevin James. And it was inspired by when Kevin James totally screwed over that actress from Kevin Can Wait because the show had bad ratings. So they killed off her character to bring back Leah Remini. And they basically just fired that actress and threw her under the bus. Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek plays Kevin's wife. And it's like she's the perfect sitcom wife. But then in the single camera stuff, you see that it looks like she wants to kill him.
Yeah, I believe that's what it is.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
It does. And I like the playing with the form. You see the single camera stuff where it's got the more realistic lighting, the more naturalistic performance, the more realistic looking sets. And then it'll cut to three camera sitcom where everybody's acting in that corny sitcom-y way and there's a laugh track. And so I guess that's where I haven't watched WandaVision yet. So I guess that's where the WandaVision comes in. Although this, I think, was happening before that.
It was.
I like that it seems to be doing more than just making a intertextual reference to the difference in the styles. It's grounded in the idea that women in sitcoms are treated like shit.
Yes. Because it's like the trope of the attractive wife who dotes on like the asshole husband in all those sitcoms.
Right. And the guy in the reality, like the guy sees himself as like the star, or as the Gen Zs would say, the main character.
Right. Right.
But he's an annoying asshole.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's cool. I think that you easily could have made a show that was just like a normal 1 hour drama about the same thing. But the fact that you have the life that she lives with her husband as the sitcom also comments, like you said, in a more meta sense on like the way that women are treated in sitcoms by and large.
Yeah.
I wonder what Kevin James thinks of it.
It's kind of bold that they name him Kevin.
Yeah. And it's Kevin Can Fuck Himself. And the show is Kevin Can Wait.
Yeah. Kevin Can Fuck Himself. Damn. I want to know Kevin James' take on this.
Maybe he gets a bad rap. Maybe we're being too mean to Kevin James.
I mean, I don't know at all. And I also don't know if it was his decision to do what happened on that show. I mean,
in general, people make fun of Kevin James for being very mediocre and everything.
I mean, but this trope goes back to the Honeymooners of like the fat idiot husband and the beautiful doting wife.
Yeah.
So it could have easily been like, you know, everybody can go fuck Raymond. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, in the trailer, there's a part where it looks like they're dressed up like the 50s. So I was wondering if they play with other sitcoms too.
Interesting.
And I love Annie Murphy.
From Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, she's so good. She's the most underrated Schitt's Creek actor. She's so brilliant, but she's so much more subtle than the other three.
Mm.
Get as much attention, I think.
All right, you heard it here, folks. Anthony hates Eugene Levy.
I do not hate Eugene Levy. Actually, Eugene Levy is kind of the straight man on the show. But I think that Annie Murphy is just so good, but like people spend so much time talking about like Dan Levy and Tapara because they're so over the top.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all great. I mean, that show, the fact that you haven't watched that show yet is a sin.
No, I watched the first three seasons.
But you got to finish it.
Yeah, I do. I got to finish it. Maybe it's not a bingeable show. I think I binged it when I should have stretched it because I think I got sick of it.
Maybe. Yeah, that happens. I binged it though, but yeah, I guess I could see that. Some stuff is hard to binge. That could be an episode. Stuff that's not good for binging.
Eugene Levy has really, he's got to thank his son because, I mean, his career was over. He was doing American Pie straight to DVD movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, even Catherine O'Hara too. It's so funny. Like, she's been around forever. Most of the people in our generation know her as the mom from Home Alone and Beetlejuice. Right. But like, I feel like now she's most known for Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break and we'll come back with the chill sesh. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by brother mine, Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
Anthony, this is the chill sesh. This is the sesh where we chill.
I've been chilling the whole time, but sure.
Oh, I was on edge that first segment.
You were being a journalist.
When you badmouth Cruella, you had me twisted.
No, I felt you coming through the screen.
I was pressed.
Did you know Emma Stone's real name is Emily?
I did. I read that BuzzFeed article.
That's not where I learned it, but okay.
Lies. So the chill sessions where we just talk about what we're currently into, you know, what we've been watching and reading and stuff. I recently got into scented candles.
What scent is that?
I'm showing Anthony a candle. That's why he laughed. This is from the company Chesapeake Bay, Mind and Body.
Mm-hmm.
And this is raspberry coconut.
I've been about that scented candle life. And wallflowers. I'm a Bath and Body Works person.
Is that right? I actually got this at Target.
I have a wallflower in every room.
What's a wallflower?
The plugins.
Oh, that's gauche.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Fucking, why not just hang a fucking evergreen tree in your room?
Wait, are they called the Wallflowers, or am I thinking of something else? No, I think they're called Wallflowers. Yeah. But I have
Glade plugins.
No, God, no. These are, how dare you? These are Bath and Body Work, the scented oil plugins. These are fancy stuff.
Oh, same shit.
And in the kitchen, I always have a scented candle. Right now I have strawberry lemonade.
Nice.
No, I'm lying. That's my next one. The one I have right now is strawberry pound cake.
Love it. See, I was going to say strawberry lemonade. That's too much of a summer spring scent.
I'm saving it for March.
Do you like go around and smell each one and be like, nah, I'm not feeling this. This isn't my vibe right now.
Yeah, of course. And you have to do the coffee beans in between each.
What the fuck is that? What's that?
Well, they don't get that at Target.
Whoa. Fucking class. Fucking warfare going on here.
Coffee beans. Sniffing coffee beans is like the equivalent of like cleansing your palate for your nose.
So they have coffee beans around?
In between candles, you're supposed to sniff a coffee bean so then your nose is refreshed.
Okay.
And then I also have the sprays. I love a good scent. A good scent will really, 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 it'll turn a bad day right around.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's so little and tiny and fucking cheap as fuck that you go, why did I wait all my life to get into this? Like, I always knew it was good.
Yeah.
Was it my fragile young male masculinity that I didn't want to have a candle?
It was your pride.
What was it? Because it's just like, your light pride. It's pretty because it's a candle. It's like alive.
Mm-hmm.
And fucking, I love coming home and being in my little man cave around my action figures, turning out the lights, lighting a beautiful smelly candle, and reading my new Kindle. I got a new Kindle.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah, your masculinity is as fragile as that flame.
You bet it is.
It was.
Not anymore.
And you know what else, too? Whenever you walk into somebody's house and it smells good, it's the first thing you say and the thing you remember.
Yeah. Scent is such an important fucking... You know, I'm big on this idea of, like, creating a nest for myself. I'm big on aesthetics. I'm big on curating your own space. And it's just another way of doing that.
Absolutely.
Plus, and I fart a lot.
Scent is the sense that's closest tied to memory.
Yes.
So a scent will really take you to a time and place.
Hold on. I got to feed my Tamagotchi.
Oh, my God.
Okay. That's one hamburger. Two hamburgers. Three hamburgers. Oh, he's hungry.
Is this filling the empty space in you?
He's denying the third hamburger, but he'll take a piece of cake. I know he will. Yeah. Yeah, I got Tamagotchi.
Cool, man.
You fucking bet it is. His name is Jason Funderburger.
Is that really his name?
Yes.
Is this a new Tamagotchi or a retro one?
It is newly manufactured, but it is the original Tamagotchi.
Yeah, I had one, as you know, when it first came out. And the first day I got it, it broke. And I was devastated.
How'd it break?
I was playing with friends and it fell out of my pocket onto the ground, the concrete, and it shattered. And I literally ran three blocks home crying. And mom was like, it's all right. We'll get you another one. Hard to find. We took a day off of school to go find it.
Right. Because this was the 90s when it first came out and it was a fucking rave.
Yeah. But I ended up getting, so that was green. I remember I had it for like 5 hours. And then my next one was purple. We got a couple days later.
Mine is pink.
Some like cheap knockoff ones. I had like a nano pet.
Yeah. As you know from the last episode of PCMC, which was about anime, I've been getting really into Japanese pop culture. And I watched this YouTube channel, Crunchyroll, which also is a service where you could like buy anime stuff and anime toys and stuff. And they did a whole history of Tamagotchis. And I realized I had never had one. So it would be a stupid fun thing to get. And it's so cheap. It's like $20.
Well, I'll remind you why you didn't have one. It's because you were too busy mercilessly making fun of me for having one.
What, is that right?
That is absolutely right. Because you were in junior high and you and your friends made fun of me for having one.
I was way too cool for one.
You're like, have fun with your stupid fake baby.
Well, I have fun with my stupid fake baby every day now. It's interesting. They had the original, but the Tamagotchi, which is by Bandai, they also have like a $100 one now with an LED screen. That's basically like, it's like you can get a fucking app of it on your phone, but it's basically
say, like, why isn't it in the app store?
I think there are versions of it in the app store.
It's so incredibly pointless.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's I'm finally getting to experience it.
Now let me ask you, the icon for medicine, is it the bottle and spoon or is it the syringe?
Syringe.
That's the old school stuff.
Oh, they got rid of that, huh?
It was originally the syringe, and then they changed it to the, when it got popular, they changed it to a spoon and bottle.
I guess that's less extreme.
Yeah, but so that's like an imitation of the original first gen.
You bet it is. You fucking bet it is.
Hold up the screen so I could see.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
It's pink.
Wait, let me see the guy.
He looks like Fran Lebowitz. He's got the mid part black short hair.
That's cool. Yeah. Wow. It looks, it's even got the egg crack around the edge and everything.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Tamagotchi means watch egg.
Does it?
Or egg watch.
Well, that's cool. All right.
Yeah. So that's sort of what I've been chilling with. What are you chilling with?
What kind of Kindle did you get?
I got a Paperwhite, which is what I had before, but it's an updated model of it. It's got the like seafoam green back, and the front is all one screen, whereas the old Kindle White like had a border.
Oh, like, it's like flush, like it's flat.
Yeah, now it's flat. The original Kindle White didn't have nighttime mode, where you just press one button and it turns the background black and the text white.
It's life changing, isn't it?
It is so life changing,
especially at night in bed in the dark.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I am such a Kindle advocate.
So am I. I love my Kindle. I really, really do.
I find that when I buy books, it's like, I'm like, why did I even buy this?
I know. I feel the same way. I've just been watching stuff. Like I watched Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
How was it?
I don't know. Like, I know I told you that it was horrible, but the more I think about it, it has some really funny parts. So
I've heard good things.
I feel like if I were to watch it, I feel like people either that I've talked to have either said it was so horrible or they've loved it. I feel like maybe if I watched it again, I would be like, oh, this is a hilarious, like ridiculous movie.
What is it about?
It's about two middle-aged women, Barb and Star from the Midwest, who go to Vista Del Mar, Florida to like go on a vacation after losing their jobs. They get fired from Jennifer Convertibles. No, they don't get fired. Jennifer Convertibles is closing down. And then there's also another scene. This is where it gets ridiculous. There's, first of all, there's full-on musical numbers, multiple.
Oh, there are. Okay.
There is another. The villain is also played by Kristen Wiig. And she is a mad woman who wants to destroy Vista Del Mar.
What?
Setting killer bees. It's all ridiculous. You know what it is? It's very, very Austin Powers-y.
Really?
Yes.
That is not what I expected at all.
It's very Austin Powers meets Coffee Talk or something. It's like the two main characters are like these cute Midwestern middle-aged women. But then there's also like the Austin Powers villain that's played by Kristen Wiig also. Has a little assistant that's like this little 10-year-old boy named Yo-Yo. It's just very strange.
Super bizarre.
It's so weird. And there were parts that were so funny, but overall it's just like, this is fucking dumb. But now I'm like, oh, maybe I liked it. I bet it'll grow on me and I'm going to love it in like a year.
Okay. Where did you watch it?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Maybe I was just mad because it was expensive, because you had to rent it and it's $20.
Whoa.
Because it's like they're trying to make up for lost money because it would have been in theaters.
Yeah, I feel like if I had to pay $20 for something, I'd be watching it with my arms crossed.
That's exactly what it is. It's that. So, you know, I don't know. It's stuff like that that makes me think like maybe this whole on-demand thing isn't really going to work the way they think it is.
Yeah, I don't know. They can't be spending the amount of money that they used to spend on movies.
No.
Because we don't want to pay that much for them.
No. But didn't they just announce that a bunch of movies are going to be released on demand the same day as in theaters?
Oh, well, HBO Max is going to release a bunch of Warner Brothers movies the same day. Like Godzilla vs. King Kong is coming out the same day. Originally, they said Matrix 4, but that they might go back on that.
So weird. I don't like this new world.
I know, but then you've got the new Ghostbusters movie that I'm dying to see that's been pushed back a year now. That it's like, just put it fucking out. Stop waiting for the theater.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with this. I mean, theaters are open. Like, theaters aren't open in New York City, but theaters are open elsewhere.
Yeah.
They're not doing well because everything is, nothing can be sold out.
Right.
I know, like, there's an AMC in Jersey that's been open.
Yeah, I went to it. I saw A Promising Young Woman.
And what's weird is, yeah, what's weird is they are weirdly running, like, new and old movies.
Yeah.
I guess in an attempt to just, like, make money.
Yeah.
They saw that they were, it was, like, Promising Young Woman, and then they also had, like, they were showing, like, Remember the Titans?
Alien.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, I guess if you like old movies, now's the time to, like, go see an old movie in a theater.
Yeah, I was going to do a double feature. I got tickets for Promising Young Woman and then Alien after, but I ended up liking Promising Young Woman so much that I needed some time to just sit with it. So I canceled my Alien and asked for a refund.
What a schmuck.
I'm sorry.
That you asked for a refund. You should have just eaten it.
No. It was on the app. So you just cancel it and it comes right back to you.
Oh, all right. And that's different.
I didn't walk up to the fucking booth and go, hey, I'm emotionally disturbed from the first motion picture and I need my money back.
Too thought-provoking.
I didn't realize that the first movie would challenge me in such an emotional, intellectual way.
Other than that, I've been watching Barry.
Oh, I like Barry. Barry's good.
I'm like 5 or 6 episodes in. I don't know how I feel totally. It's like one of those shows that's, it's very dark, obviously. The acting's great. The writing's great. It's funny. You know, it's not ha-ha funny. Obviously, it's a black comedy, but it's one of those things that it's hard to like love because it's so dark and like every character is so unlikable, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I think Barry himself has sort of a charm, he's also just like deeply disturbed.
Right. Henry Winkler is likable.
He's great. He's the best part. I really, really hate the character of Sarah.
Oh, yeah. But you're meant to.
Yeah, I guess you are. She's just so vapid. And
yeah.
I love the, my favorite part is like the romance between Henry Winkler and the detective.
Yeah, that is a good part.
And what's his name? Fuchs, the guy from Dodgeball, the older guy that's with. He's funny. He's really funny. And the Chechens are really funny too.
Steven Root is the name of the actor that you're talking about.
He's really funny.
Yeah.
Have you watched both seasons?
Yes. Did you see the episode yet with the martial artist?
No.
Okay, that's a good episode. It's good. But you know, I have this tendency to binge something then be done with it. So I don't know if I'm going to start watching it again when it comes back.
Yeah.
You know, I got a taste of it and I enjoyed it. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be much more of like a parody, kind of like silly show. Not a parody, but I thought it was going to be a silly comedy. And it's much more like Weeds or something. Like there's a lot of violence and like real crime stuff in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think it's interesting the way that they build the like analogous relationship between his life as a hitman and the lives of the actors in the acting class.
Yeah.
Like how much of what he does is like a performance and what they're doing is performing. And then like they even the terminology, like they play with like hit your mark and things like
that. Yeah.
Clever. And I just watched the one where he had like that, they were doing Macbeth and they got into like that discussion of like, is Macbeth a bad person? Cause he's a murderer, which is so funny. Cause like I've had that discussion with students in class. So I was like, oh, this is like great. Like I could show this in class.
Yeah.
But so it's cool. But I'm enjoying it. And then I watched the first couple episodes of Bridgerton. And I really like that. So I'm going to finish up with that too.
Is that sexy?
It's super sexy. I didn't realize that it was Shonda. I don't know if we talked about this. It's Shonda Rhimes.
It's part of the Shondaverse?
Part of the Shondaverse. And the quality is baked right in whenever anything's got the Shonda label on it.
I don't know if I knew that either.
Yeah, so when I first started watching it, I saw Shonda. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And it is.
Do you watch How to Get Away with Murder?
No, but I've heard that it's fun. I think she's like what Ryan Murphy wishes he could be.
Hot take.
Which is like, she makes fun campy shows, but they don't go off the rails.
That's a pretty, yeah, I like that. What Ryan Murphy wishes he was.
Have you seen the TikToks of, I just saw a TikTok of the cast members of Glee being interviewed and all bashing the show.
Really?
Yeah, and talking about how it's like so tone deaf and it doesn't age well. And they all reached a point where they started hating it while they were working on it.
Wow. I did watch a little bit of that Matthew Morrison Grinch.
Oh boy.
Thing. That was pretty upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Murphy, he's good when he's good and he's terrible when he's not good.
Yeah. He's kind of bad even when he's good though.
No, like the Normal Heart was good.
Right, but that's like a legacy play that he's just fucking
just directed, yeah.
Right, he didn't do much with it.
And the OJ show was good.
Yes, but that's because it had great writers.
And again, he had to stick to the real events.
Right. And it was written by the same team that wrote People vs. Larry Flint and Ed Wood. Like, I forget the guys' names, but they're two writers. They're really good at writing biographical films.
Yeah. Biopics, if you will.
Biopic.
Larry Flint just died last week.
Yes, yes. He was...
I think he died on the Super Bowl, so I think his death was overshadowed by that.
Oh, I see. It wasn't... Yeah, I heard he died a few days later, and I was like, oh, I... But I also then had like a bit of the Mandela effect because I was like, wait, wasn't he already dead?
I think he's been sick for a long time.
Well, a lot of people consider him to be a First Amendment hero.
Yeah, I'm for it.
That movie is good. That's a good movie.
That is a good movie. Yeah. That's directed by
Milos Forman.
Yes, who did One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest and
A Man on the Moon.
Yeah, which is another good biopic.
With Courtney Love.
Yes. She was his muse for a little while, I guess.
For like a good 5 years there, she was like a good actress.
Yeah, what happened? She like, did people stop offering her shit or?
I think she just, I don't know. I mean, she was in the band Hole. Maybe she just, I don't know. I know that there was, I remember her being on MTV and being like wasted and throwing things at Madonna. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I also remember like she was on some celebrity roast and everyone just talked about how much of an addict she is.
Yeah, so maybe her lifestyle just was out of control. She was a good actress, though.
Yeah, I thought she was a good actress.
A lot of people think she killed her husband.
Yeah, a lot of people think lots of things. I mean, I don't even want to get into it. Still watching Gilmore Girls.
Oh, how's that going?
It's going well. I'm on season 3.
So now you're full into Jess and Rory.
You fucking bet I am.
And are you on board?
I'm only like 65-70% on board the whole show.
Well, the show, listen, the show's great. Isn't Paris just the best character?
Yes, I love Paris. Paris is great.
Paris is great. Rory becomes more and more insufferable as the show goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah. Did you get to the backdoor pilot yet?
No, not yet. Is that in season 3?
It might be 4. It's a rough episode.
What is it?
Jess's backdoor pilot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The show was not picked up.
Yeah, no one wants that.
Back to Gilmore Girls. Like, it just didn't work, so he just came back to the show.
Sure. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about obsessions.
New from PCMC Studios, Cuckoo Bananas, a comedy podcast about living with depression, anxiety, PTSD, and all the other things that make life difficult.
Welcome to Cuckoo Bananas.
Cuckoo Bananas.
Bananas.
Today, Bush Chunks. I'm just angry today. I'm just mad at the world today. Everything makes me angry.
But let's talk about childhood.
I think a lot of that insecurity is because of the narrative we're fed that you have to be beautiful if you're a woman. You have to.
And I was like, well, I don't have coverage. And they're like, well, you could pay for the medicine. It's $10 million a pill.
Everybody has got their shit. There's no person that life hasn't gotten to.
Clonopin and weed, like cheese and a fine wine.
in our interactions, we are not perfect. And the sooner we can acknowledge that, the sooner we can become better people to be in relationships with.
So you want to come back in 2 weeks? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. In my head, I'm like, I'm never coming back to this place, never again.
Hey, you're really worthy and really wonderful. So take care of yourself.
Do you have any diagnoses? Has anyone ever thrown some letters at you?
A little particularly Cuckoo Bananas today.
Me and Kate are not licensed professionals. We are not therapists, psychiatrists, or psychologists.
Cuckoo Bananas, funny chats about serious stuff. Coming soon everywhere podcasts are available.
If I want this podcast to be about anything, I want it to be about honesty. This is Cuckoo Bananas. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined with Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, I'm back.
Woo! So this is Obsessions. This is where we talk about the thing that we are currently really into. Anthony, what are you currently obsessed with?
I feel like mine's kind of lame, but it's still TikTok.
Wow. All right. Tell me.
I feel like I've gone through phases in my relationship with TikTok. So as you know, I started really hating it.
Yes.
Then that turned around because I got into the algorithm. The algorithm got into me. And I started seeing things that I liked.
The rhythm's going to get you.
The rhythm got me. And I became even more obsessed. But now I feel I'm turning a corner the other way.
Going back to hate.
Yeah. And I know I keep sending you TikToks that make me angry. And you asked me the other day, am I just hate watching TikTok all day? And I feel like I'm getting to the point now where the ratio of the stuff that I like and stuff that I hate is going back. The pendulum is swinging back the other way.
Okay. Let's talk through this.
Go ahead.
Why don't you just stop watching it?
Because it is so very addictive.
I see.
I feel like they've gotten away from that guy saying, hey, why don't you take a break? Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was an ad anyway.
Yeah, but that guy used to keep me in check.
It's the perfect machine for addiction. When you look at something new, you get a bit of, I think, a dopamine injection, and then either it's good or bad, and then you just scroll again. Literally, you just like, give it to me, 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 give it to me.
Yes. But I feel like I don't know what I've done. I've messed with the algorithm, and I'm getting stuff I'm not liking anymore. I'm not finding it funny. I'm finding it back to being self-indulgent shit.
Well, you know, I got into it around the same time you got into it, which was the beginning of the pandemic, where supposedly a lot of people around our age got into it.
Yes, definitely the pandemic.
So I mean, I don't want to say that the real TikTokers are shitty.
They are,
but but maybe the kind of content that we were interested in is going away.
It hit its peak for me during the week of the election.
Uh-huh.
Because there were so many great TikToks that week.
Uh-huh. And
you feel like everybody talking about it and everybody making great TikToks about like states flipping blue and stuff. And it was just, first of all, that was just a good week in general. And just, there was such great content there. And I don't know, for me, that was a turning point. And now, you know what it is? It's a lot of stuff that's just like either aggressively not funny, or it's thirst traps, or it's like people duetting things that are fine and then like making fun of them in a way that I find annoying.
Yeah.
It's like I said earlier, the Gen Zs are my nemesis.
A good stance to have as a teacher.
They think they're so much better than everybody else.
I tell you what I've noticed recently. The comment section has gotten more toxic than it was.
It's horrible.
Yeah, I feel like it used to be a much more chill place, and now it's getting to like YouTube levels of shitty.
Yeah. That's maybe what it is too. I'm looking at the comments too much. And I know, you know, looking at the comments also affects your algorithm.
So if you're looking at the comments of something you hate, it's going to give you more of that shit.
Yeah, because sometimes I hate something and I look in the comments to see if other people hate it too.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm still watching it for hours a day. It's really unhealthy.
I put a timer on my apps on my phone. Now, I'll be honest, a lot of times I do, when the time is up, I just say ignore or you could also have it do 15 more minutes. Yeah. So I'll be honest, I do that, but it's good at least that it reminds me that I've been on it for a while.
Yeah, because you start on the TikToks and then hours go by. It's probably the reason why I haven't read anything lately, which is terrible.
Oh yeah, it gets in the way of reading. It gets in the way of sleeping. I've gotten better at like not starting to look at TikTok past 10 o'clock because it could go until like 2 a.m. and like, what happened?
I know. It's really bad.
Is there any genre of TikTok that you like?
I like funny, you know? I'm just here for a laugh.
I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time.
Exactly. I like impressions. I like when people do like impressions of stuff. I love like pop culture referencey ones. You know what it is? I think I have a lot of political ones on my For You page, and I feel like the political ones have gone back to being very toxic.
Okay.
And in a way that's like annoying to me because it's like I'm seeing a lot of ones that are like very critical of Democrats.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, and I'm just like, God, we're doing this again? Like,
you bet we are.
It just gets on my nerves. It makes me annoyed. So I don't know. There should be a dislike button.
I agree. It should be like Reddit.
Yeah.
You should be able to up and down vote things.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's still my obsession. I hope to break it.
Probably not. The only time that I've been better at curbing myself watching it. The only time that I find myself really unhappy is you can get into like a thing of watching like Karen videos. Like there's so many videos of people not wearing their masks in public and getting into a fight. And yes. it's just anger porn. It's just to make you feel angry when you watch it. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to give that energy.
And then you know what it is too? It's all toxic. Because as awful as those people are, and I agree that they're awful, then you'll go in the comments and there'll be a million people being like, where do they work? What's their name? Let's find them. Let's ruin their lives.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God. Like everybody is horrible to each other. It's like you get cruel world syndrome from watching too many of those.
Yeah.
I really, really, really hate. I have a thing about invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
And I hate that I'm seeing a lot of TikToks of people being filmed who don't know they're being filmed.
Yeah.
Even if they're not doing anything. Like I saw one where it was just a woman who I guess the person taking the video thought that like her outfit was ugly or something. Yeah. And she was just like walking down the street.
That's totally fucked up.
And then even in the comments, people were like, wow, you are a bully. Like that's really mean.
Right.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I really think that the rise of social media is going to lead these states to relook at their laws regarding consent for video. Because as of right now, like New York State, like most states, is a one-party consent state.
So you can just record anyone.
Record anybody.
I tell you what I've done, which is I spend less time on my For You page and more time on my following. And I try to just follow shit that I like. And that also keeps me on it less and just shows me the kind of content they want. It's also the way that I watch YouTube now. Like I subscribe to a lot of channels. I recently subscribed to a cool channel that is, it's these people living in Japan. They're English speaking people living in Japan. And it's all like TikToks about like, we went to this character cafe or this is what McDonald's is like in Japan. This is what it's like to go to a Hello Kitty store. And it's all like just Japanese pop culture shit. Cause that's truly my current obsession. Japanese pop culture.
So cultural appropriation is where you're at.
Oh no. I am not dressing up like anybody. I am not considering anybody else's culture costume.
You're just appreciating.
I'm appreciating the popular culture of another country. I guess that leads me to my obsession, which is I'm obsessed with the film Shin Godzilla. Shin Godzilla came out in 2016. So you might know that in 2014, they made a new American Godzilla, which was then they did Godzilla King of Monsters and now Godzilla versus King Kong. But what you might not know as a Western audience is that Japan also rebooted Godzilla. Their like original Godzilla series kind of came to an end in the early 2000s, and then they won a nice long stretch without it. And then Toho, the company that created Godzilla, they rebooted it in 2016. And Shin Godzilla is really, really good. It's good in all the smart ways that the American Godzilla would never try to even be.
Which one's the one with Millie Bobby Brown?
That's the American one. That's the sequel to the 2014 Godzilla.
Okay.
She's also in the new King Kong versus Godzilla movie. I only saw the American Godzilla, the 2014 one, I didn't really like. I haven't seen the other one yet. I'll see Godzilla vs. Kong.
What about the 1998 American Godzilla?
No, that's also bad because they tried to make it an adventure movie. Shin Godzilla is good because it's scary. It's terrifying. It's directed by two men, Hideaki Anno, who I talked about him recently. He's the creator of Neon Genesis Evangelion. And Shinji Higuchi. And these two men, basically there's two things going on in this movie that seem to contradict each other, but actually work together really well. On one hand, you've got the Godzilla stuff, which is terrifying. He is really scary looking. He's very slow moving. A lot of the images are reflective of the Fukushima disaster.
Okay.
They do this clever thing where he doesn't just come up as Godzilla, he evolves. So like first he's like a big, gross, kind of like sea serpent that just slithers around the streets and like bleeds everywhere. And he's got like a fish eye. It's super gross. And then he grows legs and then he eventually becomes the Godzilla that we know. But he's got these beady little eyes and he's black and he's just really scary looking. And then the other side of the coin is the movie also with the human characters has this very interesting satirical biting kind of political commentary. There are like over 100 speaking named characters and it's all people from the government. And whenever they speak, you actually see their name and the title, their office that they hold underneath them on the screen.
Okay.
And like, there'll be funny scenes where like there's 20 guys sitting in a room and they're talking about like what's happening and getting reports and stuff and butting in and stuff. And then somebody goes, you know what? The prime minister should be part of this meeting. So all 20 guys get up and walk down the hall to another room and then sit in that room. And then they go, you know what? We should actually have this other guy in the meeting. And then they all get up again and walk to another hallway. And there's a lot of like making fun of bureaucracy in it.
Okay.
It's parodic and it has some really funny parts, but it's not so funny that it throws off the horror of the Godzilla. And it's not so funny that it makes the whole thing a joke. It's just biting. It's biting kind of political commentary. Basically what it's saying is, unlike the original Godzilla, which was kind of like, look what happened when America dropped a nuclear weapon on us. This is more self-inflicted. This is more like, look how shitty we are. And it's basically like, if there was a Godzilla, we would fuck it up. We would completely like have meeting after meeting and like not get anything done while he's like killing people in the streets. Like we're in like our suits and ties, like talking politely.
Well, I think that the pandemic has taught all of us that all those disaster movies where like people come together for the good of getting through are bullshit. So it's like similar to that.
Absolutely. Actually, I even said when I watched it like a week or two ago, it's the perfect movie to watch right now because it's got that vibe. Because it also goes on for a little while. So it's like there's the initial shock and then there's people getting used to the weird way of living with Godzilla. And the most poignant narrative moment in the movie, and this is a criticism of America, is at one point some scientists, like, I don't know how they do the study, but they figure out that there's a 14% chance of Godzilla leaving Japan and coming to America. So because of that 14%, America decides it's their issue and they're going to handle it. So the American president, who you never see, you just always like see his hand, it's okay. Not Trump, but it's just any American, it's just the American president. He calls the prime minister of Japan and says, hey, we're going to help you. Here's how we're going to help you. We're going to drop a nuclear weapon and kill Godzilla. And that's what we're going to do. We're helping you, but you can't stop us. Go on TV and convince your people that this is us helping. And it's like this very poignant emotional moment where like the prime minister starts crying and he's like, how am I supposed to tell the Japanese people that America is going to drop a third nuclear weapon on our country, but it's for our good? So then at that point, America kind of becomes a bad guy. It's just, you look at the, if you look at the 2014 American reboot and this 2016 Shin Godzilla, it's just like, why can't we get Godzilla right in this country? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a simple idea. Make him scary. You know what I mean? Like the 98 one was really ridiculous because it's like a funny adventure movie. So it's like way off. And then the 2014 one is just kind of like, oh, it's just lame. I don't know.
I wonder if it's just has something to do with American audiences and American sensibilities.
I mean, probably. I mean, you know, our relationship to Godzilla is so different from their relationship to Godzilla. I mean, like, Shin Godzilla for them is like when we made Batman Begins. It's like, we've had this thing with us for a long time. Let's try to look at it in this fresh new way.
Right.
Where we're kind of just like, hey, you've heard of Godzilla, right? You know that reference. He is a monster.
Yeah, we can't even decide what he is. Like in that 90s one, he was kind of just like a dinosaur thing.
Right. He doesn't have the atomic breath or any of the... Well, that movie so badly wants to be Jurassic Park. There's even like the Godzilla babies that is just like the raptor scenes.
Yeah. God, that movie's hard. I remember going to see that, and even as a kid thinking it was horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty. In one of the 2000, early 2000 Japanese Godzillas, Godzilla meets the American Godzilla and kills him like in a second. He just easily kills him.
Yeah.
It was a real fuck you to America.
Godzilla 2000.
I think that was Godzilla 2000, yeah.
Oh, that's the Matthew Broderick one? That's what it was called?
No. The Godzilla 2000 is the Japanese one.
Oh, okay. All right.
Gotcha. The American one is just called Godzilla.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's my current obsession. You can find it on Amazon Prime. You have to rent it for like $2 or something. You can either get it dubbed or subbed. I actually got it dubbed first, and then I was like, oh, this isn't what I wanted, so I went and paid again and got it subbed. But it might be actually better to watch it dubbed because there's literally like 100 speaking characters and it gets very hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
It's just a very smart movie. It's definitely worth seeing.
Sounds good.
You know what the best American Godzilla movie is? Cloverfield. Hot take.
Oh, hot take.
I still think Cloverfield's good.
I haven't seen it since it first came out, but I'm sure it is. I've never seen the other Cloverfields either.
The second one is better. Cloverfield Lane is actually really good. I haven't seen the third one.
Is it the same monster?
No, it's some people say it's in the same universe or it's happening at the same time. It's more like the Twilight Zone. It's like, it's just different. Each one is different.
The real monster in that one is John Goodman.
You absolutely, that is his best performance. He's so scary in that.
He's a great actor.
He is such a great actor. You know, Anthony, I think the real monsters are us.
You're right.
This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined by Anthony Bongiorno. Anthony, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, everyone.
We end the episode by saying,
go bye-bye.